So here we are, our final episode of the My Green Business Podcast in partnership with Fujitsu. So net zero targets have been set and measurements have been put in place. Now what? For many organizations, embedding sustainability targets beyond the corporate management level is proving to be a challenge. So the strength of an organization depends on its people. Every employee has a role to play in supporting their business to succeed. And the same can be said when it comes to achieving net zero. But with rising temperatures, global weather warnings, and an increase in natural disasters, people are feeling helpless. The climate crisis is overwhelming. And how can organizations support employees so that they feel empowered to drive change and reach decarbonization targets? I'd like to introduce you to our four guest panelists today. We have Sarah Jane Littleford, Head of Responsible Business at Fujitsu. We've got Jerry Levin, Field Chief Technology Officer, EMEA, at Cloud Software Group. We've got Claire Martin, Purpose, Climate, DE&I Curriculum Lead at NatWest Group, and James Doyle, Head of Operations at Octopus Energy. It was a great conversation. Here's what they had to say. So thank you for joining us, panelists, on our fourth episode of this series. Sarah Jane, would you just very quickly introduce yourself, and then we can open up with the first question.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jarvis. So my name is Sarah Jane Littleford, and I work for Fujitsu. I have a dual role at Fujitsu, one part of which is heading up responsible business for a region of Fujitsu that we call Global Delivery. It's 9 countries across the world. And the other part is looking at ESG strategy for Fujitsu offerings.
Great, Sarah Jane. So Fujitsu, a huge organization. So how are your employees feeling about the climate crisis, and what would you say the overall feeling is among your teams?
So our employees are very focused on the climate crisis and really overall ESG. So the Fujitsu purpose, which was rolled out just a couple of years ago, is all about making the world more sustainable through technology. So this is really at the core of everything we do. It's how we make business decisions. It's how we drive our teams forward. So absolutely, climate change is a huge part of that.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you. And, you know, Claire, in fact, would you introduce yourself and where you're from?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Claire Martin, and I'm from NatWest Group. My role is curriculum lead, and I look at all of the curriculum or education strategies, if you like, for the group for purpose, embedding purpose, as Sarah's mentioned, that they do at Fujitsu, climate, and diversity and inclusion as well.
Okay, brilliant. And would you add anything in terms of how your employees are feeling about the climate crisis? Because it'd be really useful to get different perspectives.
Actually, very similar. So in 2020, we announced our purpose-driven strategy as well, with a key focus on climate change and nature and biodiversity more broadly now, really looking at some of the wider environmental factors and the social factors within that. So our colleagues have been on that journey since 2020, and the momentum has absolutely swelled since that point. And there's huge desire to make change across the organisation and across the industry.
Yeah, lovely. So you're responsible for a learning and development strategy, and that, I suppose, that supports, you know, all the colleagues and customers, suppliers, and helping them to transition to a low carbon economy. And I guess a more sustainable and inclusive future, which is what we're all hoping for. But how has this been received by the employees? Like, because you're kind of, you know, they come to work, they've obviously got their jobs to do, and then you're kind of adding this extra flavor into the conversation. What, you know, how is it received by the people?
Yeah, completely. I mean, it's a huge spectrum, right? So there's over 60,000 colleagues at NatWest Group. So it's a real spectrum of different attitudes around it. I think overall there's a real buy-in to the concept of purpose-driven business and actually going after sustainable long-term profits whilst trying to solve some big societal problems. So I think conceptually it is, but actually when you bring it down to an individual basis, that's part of what my role is actually just how do you activate that? How do you enable colleagues to understand what their role in climate change is, whether that's professionally or personally, especially when they aren't working in a perceived direct role facing into climate change or supporting our customers or suppliers.
I mean, NatWest are one of the kind of leading companies, I guess, when it comes to purpose. Certainly we've known about them and they seem to be leading the way in many ways. So thank you for that. Joey, question for you. And this is, firstly, you could just very quickly introduce yourself.
Sure. So Jarvis, I'm Jerry Lavin. I'm a field CTO at Cloud Software Group. So Cloud Software Group may not be as well known, but we're made up of a merger of two organizations called Citrix and TIBCO. And I have, as well as the day job, I organize a sustainability focused ERG as well within the business.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. So you should have a good insight knowledge on this. So in light of the merger, I mean, that's probably a big question. And has this affected your sustainability engagement with staff?
It's affected a lot of things, I think it's fair to say. We've gone through some significant change in the last, it's almost 6 months now. Not only did we merge, we also went from being a public business to a private entity. So I think, there was a number of changes that's brought about. I think from the level of engagement and the level of interest that we've seen from our staff, that hasn't changed. And if anything, I think what we've seen is, despite everything else that was happening, restructuring, changes of focus, changes of business model, we still had our staff pushing our senior leadership for answers on these questions, both formally and informally. And I'm happy to say that we've seen progress with that. And then, the private equity organizations, Vista and Elliott, who are involved in creating Cloud Software Group, they themselves have a number of ESG and very specific sustainability focused goals as well.
Very good. Look, why do you think it's important for everyone in an organization to rally behind targets and be on the same page? Like from your perspective, why is that important?
Well, I think there's two things. I would say it's important to have targets to run at. I mean, as a business, we need to have targets that we can go back to our customers as well. We're suppliers, we're part of their supply chain. We need to be able to say that we've signed up to specific targets, we have particular goals for decarbonization ourselves, we need evidence for that. I think that then if we take that back internally, that gives us evidence that we can provide to our own employees as well, right? It's, people are very, I think, much more sensitive to greenwashing than they were a few years ago. They're also more informed because the climate crisis made this, headline news for people. I mean, not every organization is as lucky to have, somebody like Claire who's focused on the actual, education internally, but even if, I think individuals themselves are educating themselves. But I also like the idea of, having targets, having goals that we can rally to. It also gives you something, some of your more passionate individuals in the organization, something to be in opposition to. It allows them to say these goals aren't good enough and these targets aren't good enough and we need to do more. So that makes for interesting conversations, challenging conversations. But if you don't state what you're going to do, it remains kind of woolly for everyone, both those in support and those in opposition as well.
Fantastic. And I mean, I can see the rest of you nodding there. Sarah, Jane, Claire, James, did you want to build on that or add anything from your internal perspective?
I think just on that last point, we've seen the same at NatWest Group as well around the emergence of actually colleagues taking matters into their own hands. We've got a number of employee-led networks internally, rallying the troops and that grassroots movement around a whole number of different areas. And our Sustainable Futures Network is the newest, but it was put in place a few years ago, and there's about 5,000 employees within that, really trying to make change across the organization from bottom up, and you know, be that conscious of the organization and challenge where it's needed to be, or bring in different products and propositions to support colleagues. So as much as I'm leading on the education strategy from the top down and building that capability we need in order to reach our ambitions, there is still huge desire and momentum from our employees through employee-led networks.
It's really about enabling employees to bring their personal passions into the workplace, right? And that really allows our employees, or all employees, all of us, to be healthier, happier, and more productive at work when we have that opportunity.
Brilliant. James, I can see you nodding there. James, just very quickly introduce yourself so our viewers know who you are.
Yep. Thanks for having me, Jarvis. My name is James Doyle. I'm head of operations at Octopus Energy, and we are a group of some of the brightest and most empathetic people who are driving the global energy transition. So we're really at the heart of this topic. It's our reason for being, it's our why, it's our just cause. And my role within that is more specifically looking at our retail operation in the UK. We've recently become the second or third largest supplier, depending on how you measure it. And we have a large responsibility to use that position well, and to do only net positive things with that.
Very nice. I mean, that's, you know, let's say that you're the kind of new kid on the block in terms of a company. Still enormous. I think you claimed unicorn status not so long ago. But, you know, having, a fresher perspective, coming into an industry at a different time, are you using your company's culture, and I know you're very strong on culture, to empower employees and to drive sustainability and sustainable change? And if so, how? And secondly, where does the cost of living crisis and, you know, energy, huge issue right now, where do these issues factor into the some of the movements that you're seeing?
Yeah, perhaps let me start with the cost of living crisis, right? Because that has been a spanner in the works, really, for our customer base significantly, right? Spanner in the works is a very light, actually, term. It's been really damaging to our customers, and it's been really challenging to our team as well. And particularly the last 18 months, we've found it really tough to make sure that we don't lose sight of what we're seeking to drive, and that we seek out opportunity within this crisis to drive the transition of our industry at an even greater rate, and I think we've done that in many different ways, right? We've been quite opportunistic about looking at mediocrity in terms of commitments and service level by a lot of our competitors, and we've been pretty unapologetic about doing so as well. And I think, you know, the cost of living crisis is a gas crisis in many respects, and it has exposed our reliance on that fossil fuel quite transparently, and we've been using that in terms of how we communicate what the future can look like, and what parts of the future we're living in terms of the products and offerings we have now. And then the first part of your question was about engagement and what's being done locally. And I think Claire mentioned it earlier about, right, kind of decentralizing and not having this as a top-down approach. And that's very much that's our culture regardless, right? We're an organization now active in 13 countries. We've got around 8 offices in the UK, and we've got a pretty large remote workforce, and we give those teams locally the space, the autonomy, the money as well, so that they can come up with some of their own solutions about what's important to them in terms of sustainability. And things are really important to them in terms of sustainability. That's, you know, for most of them, the reason why they're with us, because they care to do something about the problem instead of being disabled by it.
Very good. What would be a real standout project that you've seen, or a community-led initiative that you've seen that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah. So for me personally, I'm involved in a lot of our new offices. I look after our property portfolio, and so I'm involved in fit out, the selection of property, the fit out of that office, and then our use of it and our activity within it. We've just, well, it's maybe a year ago, but there's still elements of what I'm working on today. We've completed a new office in Manchester, in the city centre there. And so much thought and effort went into the choices we made for furniture, the supply chains that we could access in that local region, across the northwest and towards Leeds as well, where we were going to be able to upcycle and recycle existing furniture that we had, and going to really sustainable producers, looking quite deeply at the contractors and subcontractors that would be working, looking at the commutes attached to them coming to do the work, and then the use of the office today in terms of what's working and what's not working, and being very conscious about waste as well. So that for me is a standout one, because that industry, I was really surprised by how much that industry focuses on not reusing furniture and throwing things out after a couple of years. So that one stands out.
Very good, very good. I can see the rest of you nodding as well. I mean, if there was a project within your organisation that you just think is really cool and very really dealing with the problem. Anybody got anything that they'd like to share?
I'd love to jump in on this
please
one,
do.
Jarvis.
Please do.
In India, we work really closely with an NGO called SHARP, which is focused on healthcare. And we have sponsored with them what's called a medical health unit. So it's an ambulance that goes to underserved areas of the community around one of our offices in a town called Pune in India, and provides these very underserved communities with medical care. And it's usually around things like diabetes or glaucoma or diseases of aging. And our employees get to volunteer alongside the medical staff to provide these services. And it has been absolutely life-changing for these communities. And this is one of these areas where we see a lot of cross-cutting across the ESG, right? Because you're serving the social, but it's also having a huge impact on the environment. And so we're really seeing some good long-term outcomes from this.
Nice. Great to hear. Claire, Jerry, anything to add from what's going on within your organizations?
Yeah, I mean, I can come in on our sort of wider purpose areas of focus, if you like. So I said earlier on that we announced our purpose-driven strategy in 2020 with three initial areas of focus. So climate change obviously being a major part of that, and really reducing our own financed emissions, our own impact, our own operations, similar to what James has been talking about. The second area of focus has been enterprise. So how do we remove barriers to entrepreneurs? So we've got our accelerator programs. We've got 12 across the UK really supporting 90 entrepreneurs every 6 months to come through those accelerator programs, you know, support them with coaching, support them with upskill, and really remove some of those barriers to access to finance, access to investment, and support them on that journey and build confidence and mindset around that. And then the third area of focus, which you would think is probably more akin to a bank, but is how do we develop financial capability and health within the community? So we've got a number of schools programs and a number of initiatives out in the community, local community, where we go into schools with our Money Sense programs. We've got our Career Sense programs, which support kids into future career pathways, developing their skill set and understanding what they can do. We've also got our Dream Bigger programs as well, which are our entrepreneurship skills programs as well. So there's that join up piece there. So they're some of the activities that we've got within our wider remit.
Great. And is there anything specifically targeting around the kind of sustainability or disruptive paradigm that we need to evolve into? Because I know, you know, you're quite a forward thinking bank, and I, you know, we bank with you, and I've been on your scale accelerator program as well. So but is there anything specific that you would say is really, really helping, you know, businesses, whether they're SMEs or startups, to really understand things like scope three, you know, that kind of a bit of a gray area for a lot of businesses? But are you doing anything on that side?
Yeah, we're doing a huge amount across our sort of business and commercial bank to support our customers to transition. We recognise, you know, climate risk and transition risk specifically is huge, and we really need to support our customers to transition to a lower carbon economy, right? So we've got a number of propositions. Obviously, I focus on the education piece, so we're working really closely with colleagues in order to give them the agency and build the confidence for them to have conversations and, you know, valuable conversations with customers to put those sustainability plans in place and understand the wider rhetoric. You know, it's not just a case of I should care because of climate change, but actually this makes business sense to you. You know, that it's that long-term investment. We've also got a number of products and propositions across that side as well. So we've launched our Carbon Planner, which enables essentially SMEs to really understand, you know, what's their impact in terms of emissions, and start to pull all of that data together to really understand some of the actions that they can take to reduce their own impact.
Yeah, great. That's the holy grail. Thank you for that. I knew that, but I just wanted to remind our viewers of that. So thank you for resharing it. Jerry, I bet you've got some. Bet you've got some nice stories to share.
Well, I don't know. I've heard some really amazing ones just now, but I think probably, you know, kind of to go back to what we were talking about earlier, the sort of corporate and the personal. I think on a product side and a solution side, you know, we've worked with through what was legacy Citrix and legacy TIBCO, both. Using those data capabilities they had, TIBCO have a great case study with wind turbine manufacturers and using additional data efficiencies to help them achieve better outcomes on that side. And we've been doing a lot of work with some of our partners in this space about, you know, taking advantage of IT equipment that's already in use and really factoring in the embedded carbon that's already in the production of that equipment, so they can continue to get value out of it, you know, where in the past it might have gone to landfill and just ended up as e-waste. So I think we're continuing to work on that, and as the IT demands of organizations and the business demands changing, we're looking at other ways that we could use our products to support them. But I also think we talked earlier about the power of the individuals within the organization. And it's just that the sharing of ideas and the kind of unfiltered stuff that kind of bubbles up from there. So I think within that ERG that I mentioned, the broader community, is just a lot of sharing and cross-pollinations of ideas. So there seems to be probably something close to James's heart, like a lot of interest in renewable energy. A lot of people sharing, you know, data points around things they've done. There seems to be a groundswell of interest in solar in the last year for understandable reasons. A community of people kind of encouraging others to move to EVs, sharing best practices from the different our different locations, different office locations as well. So just taking advantage of those informal but community-driven groups that we have internally and encouraging others to take advantage of these in the personal life, but also in the way that they work as well.
Yeah, lovely. I love that. It's funny, you know, I've been in this game so long. I remember when they, you know, you couldn't even talk about these types of things because there just wasn't access to anything. And now there's so much going on. So it's great that you're, as organizations, you are using what's available. It's brilliant.
I think it's like anything, it reaches a tipping point, right?
Yeah.
And then it goes from being a sort of, you're the person that's avoided at dinner parties to you're the one that can start the conversation.
Yeah, you're suddenly getting invited again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, well, I might get uninvited, but it'd be for other reasons.
So. Brilliant. So that's, I mean, I think we've got loads of information there, and there's some really insightful you know, ways that people within organizations, whether you're an employee or an employer, can get engaged. But We always have a bit of an ending question, and we open this up to all of you. But I will name drop who perhaps could answer it first. But what's the one piece of advice you wish your organization had when, you know, trying to embed sustainability and encourage employees towards your goals? And is there one thing listeners can take away so that they can start, you know, acting on things today? So who would like to answer that question first? You're all smiling. Who wants to go?
I'm happy to go first, Jarvis.
Sarah Jane.
At least no one else can claim my points.
The stage is yours.
So I think what we as Fujitsu found initially challenging, but also continue to find challenging, is global variations across the world in how we approach sustainability, regulations in this area, and just kind of general cultural approaches to it. So we do obviously set our strategy at a global level from our HQ in Japan, but there is some variation in how we implement this in different regions and in countries within those regions, and then in the office locations within those countries. And just making sure that we standardize this and move everyone towards the same general outcomes continues to be something that we struggle with.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised because culturally, I mean, I was in India for 3 months, and, you know, you talk about sustainability in some areas and people just look at you completely goggle-eyed, and then, you know, in other parts, it's like, oh, yeah, it's very much a part of the new city's format. So thank you for that, Sarah Jane. Appreciate that. So should we do ladies first and ask Claire next?
Thank you. I'm going to stay close to home, right? So I think my one piece of advice is educate yourself, right? So it all starts with awareness. And I think if you're unsure about what to do or what action you can take, I think that's the first step. Seek out information. We're not short of it. As we've talked about, there is lots and lots of education out there for people to understand actually what actions that they can take. And I think, you know, something that we use internally, so we've got a partnership with the University of Edinburgh in order to deliver our education strategy. And we use a really, really simple tool called the spheres of influence. Just really supports people to understand or start to block out some of the overwhelm that we get with sustainability and climate. So really think about that inner sphere of control. What can I control myself? What are some of the actions that I can do, either personally or professionally, that will support me to reduce my own impact? And then where the magic really, really happens is in that sphere of influence. So we all have massive networks, whether that's at work or at home, friends, family, etc. And we can start to influence some of those networks. We can start to talk about it. We can start to educate other people. And the wider sphere is the bit that, you know, the wider sphere of concern that we can just stop and put to bed and not focus on, because it's overwhelm. Actually, if we focus on those two inner circles, that's when we start to get action and collective action.
Lovely. Talk about macro and micro there. That's fantastic from Sarah, Jane and Claire. Brilliant. Love that. So, James, we'll go to you because we haven't heard from you for a while.
Yeah, piece of advice, I suppose, you know, most organizations, I think we can take it for granted that there's going to be a number of people who care deeply about this topic, and that number of people is only growing over time. So I think the piece of advice is empower those people and give them space and autonomy to organize around sustainability and see what blossoms from that. But as leaders, make sure that you're committed to it, make sure that you continue to platform it, and make sure that it's seen as a business priority in terms of how you celebrate it and celebrate the success that they've done. And I think the reason that's the piece of advice I'd give is because we've created really good habits whereby we focus on a weekly basis as an organization on celebrating and sharing some of the really great pieces of work that are done and that are successful, and also the ones that fail as well, right? So give people the power.
Brilliant, brilliant. Love that bit of advice. Thank you very much. Some real nuggets here. Jerry, you've got to follow those three. So here we go.
I know. Thanks for that, Jarvis. I think James, Claire and Sarah have said a few things probably more eloquently than I will. But I think the empowerment and the community part of it, I think it was circles of influence, maybe Claire used the term like that. I think that's really important. If I maybe start from or finish where I started and talking about the kind of corporate and the personal, I think what we found really useful is finding people who are good at connecting people and bringing together those individuals who have influence in, you know, in the area that they work in with their peers, who know other people, who have personal areas of interest, so giving them ways of expressing themselves, both formally and informally. But then on the corporate side, taking some of that knowledge and justifying changes about how we work, how we do product investment, how we go to market, how we, you know, what we want, how we want to be as a business. Because I think sometimes, again, senior leadership, they have a number of areas where they need to focus. But helping to bring together that evidence and data to support, you know, them making the right decisions, that often sometimes can happen formally, but sometimes it just needs a community of people to come together and help others to do that. So I guess if you have the tooling, you know, great. If you don't, at the very least, just get people together and talking, and the good things can happen from there.
Yeah, lovely. I love that, and I love the leadership perspective from you, James, and that. Let people get on with it, and they normally come up with great ideas. So fantastic. Thank you ever so much, Sarah, Jane, Claire, James and Jerry. It's been really wonderful speaking to you again. I hope that we can have follow-ups with the organizations and you individually in the foreseeable future. Thank you for joining us on this last episode of our series My Green Podcast, The Business Show. Thank you very much indeed.